can't out-Trump Trump. I will be writing a joke, and he'll just win. I was writing, I was doing my job, my work, writing jokes. I'm writing some kind of White House Stormy Daniels porn star joke, and I always have the news on in the background, right? And I'm writing, all I hear is Space Force. Space Force. We fighting shit from outer space. Space Force, like, who let him watch Star Wars unsupervised? And whenever he goes on one of those tangents, right, my favorite thing, I don't even watch him during the speech. I like to watch the grown-ups behind him, right? Because they have to keep a straight face. So he's talking about Space Force, but behind him, you have the leaders of the Army, the Navy, Marines, the Air Force, and they're standing at attention like, Space Force, what the fuck? Are you kidding? Space Force? Right, they're looking at the Air Force guy like, good luck. Have fun in outer space. We're only going to the border.
Hey, what up, everybody? That was the hysterical musings on our upcoming Space Force by none other than Alonzo Bowden. Who season 1, season 3 on NBC's Last Comic Standing. Yes, I'm Michael Steele, and I'm hanging with Alonzo Bowden today. He's a regular on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me and Comedy Congress, as well as being a panelist on the game show Network's Man of a Man. In August 2019, Alonzo starred in his fourth stand-up special, Heavy, I love this one, Heavy Lightweight, and given my connections to boxing, that makes a lot of sense. In the special, he touched upon a range of topics from slavery, cell phones, and the Me Too movement to millennials, Kanye West, and Taco Bell. Now, that's a combination for you. As he says, quote, he likes to mix it up and hopes that audiences will join him for a laugh and a think or two. We're going to do that today with Alonzo. Welcome to the podcast, brother.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you. And, you know, there's been a Space Force development since then. I don't know if you saw the logo for Space Force. It's surprisingly like the logo for the USS Enterprise.
Yeah, I know. That's why I picked that clip, because I figured you'd have some thoughts on that one.
Well, I know whoever did it, they did it on purpose. They were like, we're going to draw him the Enterprise. He'll never know.
And they were right. He doesn't know.
No, doesn't know. Just
no clue.
Put it up there.
Oh, man, I love it. No, but you're so right. I mean, when we saw that, I tweeted that out, and I just went, really? all the money in our federal budget, and this is what you come up
Space
with?
Space Force.
Yeah. Yeah, Starship Enterprise. Man, you have. I've watched a lot of your stuff and thoroughly enjoy it. I'm old school in the sense I look at what you do, the way you do it, and it's sophisticated. It's funny. It does, like you said, it makes you think. How do you put it all together, particularly given the material you have to work with? On any given day, we're in a 24-hour reality TV programming session. There must be days when you sit there and go, I just got to walk away from this shit for a while. I can't deal with this.
Well, you know, I tell people all the time, if it wasn't real, it would be hilarious, right? It's just what you said. If it wasn't real, this would be the greatest reality show of all time. Our job, being a comic, I've always taken it as like, go back to the court jester, right? He was the only guy who was allowed to make fun of the king, and that was his job,
right?
You know, and it just had to be funny. So I carry that mantle, and George Carlin was my idol. I think Carlin was the greatest social commentator we ever had. So yeah, it's just what I do, man. I look at this stuff and I'm like, does anybody realize what's going on? Like, right, just yesterday, I had a guy, he's from South Africa, and he said, you know, I hate to say it, but you guys are looking at 4 more years. And he said, but that's great for you being a comic. And I'm like, No, it's not. No, it's not. We can write other material.
Right.
We don't need him. Like we don't want to narrate the end of Western civilization. We will if we have to.
Right.
We'd rather not.
Right. No, I totally identify with that. I mean, I get that, you know, from the political side, and certainly having served in political office, you know, people say this must be very difficult for you. I was like, no shit, you can't. You really? Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. This is not what we bargained for, and that's the whole thing, you know. And it's a delicate dance because you've got a lot of folks, and we've seen a number of comedians, guys who, you know, roll on the same block that you do. They get blowed up because of the PC culture and all of the things that they're now saying you can't say. But when you're in a target-rich environment that, you know, certainly a lot of folks on my side unwittingly seem to offer up, and even now on the Democratic side with Bernie, which we'll get into in a moment, how do you navigate that? How do you stay relevant in a way that you don't offend, but you make the social commentary, and you have people laugh at it, but at the same time think about it? That's got to be tough to do.
Well, here's the thing. If it's funny, you can say it. You know, that I still believe in that. Most comics, we still work with that. I've had people at a show. I've had a guy in a Trump hat come up to me and say, I don't agree with anything you say, but it's funny.
Right.
You know, and
right.
And that's the best you
could
do.
That's what you want. Right. That's what you want.
Is to get someone to do that. As far as the PC culture and people getting hurt, there is obviously times change and language changes. You know, like Eddie Murphy talked about it, right? And
yeah.
He said in Delirious, you know, he must have said fag or faggot
100
times.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
And he's like, well, I wouldn't do that today, right? But back then, that was funny. It was part of it. So times change, words change, but funny is funny. And some people, and I talk about this in my act now, there are some people who come to a comedy show looking to be offended. And if you
really?
Walk in looking to be offended, I'll be happy to accommodate you. Now, you'd be surprised, Michael, in my special in Heavy Lightweight.
Right.
And the reason I gave it that title, because I do some heavyweight stuff. You talked about it. I do some politics and race.
Yeah.
But I'm also talking about Taco Bell and yoga pants. I had someone email me. They were mad about the yoga pants joke.
Really?
Like, if yoga pants sets you off, I got nothing.
Right.
I can't.
Right. Yeah, you can't compete
with that. I
cannot
work in your parameters
right.
If the yoga pants joke set you off.
That's the part that when you say that people come to the show looking to be offended, I can translate that in my space, because when I talk, you know, do talks around the country or do events at various places, invariably someone will come up to me and they will say, "Yeah, I was prepared not to like you," and I'm standing there thinking, so why would you get in your car and drive all the way across town to see someone you don't like? I'm glad you did. Thank you very much. But it's just kind of, what is that psyche, man? I don't get it. I mean, you see it all the time. I don't get it.
You know, we laugh about the backhanded compliments people will give you. And one of them I get, and all comedians get this, and it's, they'll open with, well, you know, I don't like comedy. Why are you here? Why would you, just what you said, you got in your car and went to a place to see something you don't like. Like,
no, but
you know,
it's worse. It's
not a,
it's worse, Alonzo. They paid money to see you.
Yeah.
I mean, hell, listen, me, they see for free. You, they paid money.
I'm not a country music fan. You know, if you're a country music fan, that's fine. I'm not a country music fan. I'm not paying to go to a country music concert to sit there and say, you know, I don't like this at all. I just, you know, I'm glad I got here early.
It's
so
crazy.
I could sit here and not like this entire show.
And no, it's great. It is some of the craziest stuff in the world. How do you guys, you know, the brothers and sisters in that neighborhood of comedy, how do you keep up with a character/caricature like Donald Trump? What do you do? I mean, because I assume some of your own political leanings, you know, will seep in some space. I know a lot of guys try to keep it above board. They don't want to get into that end of the political pool. But how do you guys navigate that space and you know, keep up with the lot of stuff that Trump puts out there?
Well, you know, I'm liberal, and obviously most comics are. Mm-hmm. So, and I don't mind that coming into my act and into my space. You know, I'm not going to deny it or worry about hurting your feelings. It's where I stand. When it comes to Donald Trump, to be honest, Michael, we're tired of it.
Really?
You know, because every day I could talk about some incompetence that he does. Now, the late night guys, you know, Trevor right. Noah, Steve Colbert, it's their job, right? They do it every day. So they have to talk about him. But touring stand-ups, you know, in my show, and I was even talking to Michelle Wolf about this, right, mm-hmm. who's famously destroyed him at the correspondence dinner. You can't do it all show every show. Like, we have to do other topics because, you know, well, what ridiculous tweet did he say today? What word could he not pronounce to this time? You
right.
know, so it kind of becomes the same thing. Now, obviously, there are times when it's funnier than when it's not. You know, him going to India and trying to pronounce those names.
I know.
As a comic, it's like, well, I can't write it any funnier
right.
than what he did. I could not make up pronunciations of these words more, you know, horrible than what he did. So it's something for me. I touch on it in every show. I'll do a bit or two about Trump, but I can't make the whole show about him because it's the same thing. It's just a different topic that he doesn't know anything about,
right?
It's just a different group that he's insulted, you know? So yeah, it's kind of a balance, man. I'll tell you, because you have to touch on it. You can't act like we live in a vacuum, but at the same time, I don't want to spend 45 minutes talking about Donald Trump,
right?
You know? And,
right.
and the other problem with it is if you do spend 45 minutes talking about him, he loves that. That's his favorite thing. You know, it's that good talk good about me or bad about me as long as you're talking about me. So it's like, no, I'm not gonna feed that beast, not 100%.
So in this cycle, this political cycle with the big presidential election coming up in 9 months, you have your choice on the other side. You have a flavorful menu of talented Democratic candidates who run the range from, you know, the Mike Bloomberg, Bernie Sanders, to the Pete Buttigieg and Elizabeth Warren. How are you assessing, both as a comic and as a voter, what you're looking at, what it may or may not mean, and just how damn funny is it in the end?
Well, as a comic, you know, you got to write fast because they're dropping like flies. Okay. You know, I got a great Andrew Yang bit. Oh, never mind. You know, so you got to, you know, you got to stay on top of it. The pen is flying.
Right.
And that is the thing with the Democrats, right? Because the race is so ridiculous. And in the beginning, like last year, I said, I'm not doing anything because there's 28 candidates. I can't write jokes about all these people. I ain't got time to do the research. Get
right.
it down to a reasonable number.
Right. Call me when you get it to 20, right?
Right, exactly. So now, you know, I got Bernie, right?
Right.
Who I like, but let's face it, Bernie's 80 years old and had a heart attack. So I'm really curious who his vice president's going to be.
Right.
Because that's who I'm looking at,
right.
you know. You got Biden, right? The only thing I like about Biden is I know he wants to physically fight Donald Trump. You know, if you told him no election, two of you go in a room, one of you comes out, Biden would be all in, right? Yeah.
I'm running a visual right now. I'm just because I know the vice president. You don't know how on the mark you are. Oh,
you know,
my God.
Elizabeth Warren. A great candidate. She's a woman. I don't know if America's ready. You know, America might be ready, but America.
America.
You got to watch out for America. America ain't ready for no woman, some bitch, in the what, some bitch. And that is honestly a debate in America right there.
Okay. So can I take that off ramp with you for a moment? Because you actually touch on something that I think is very interesting. I got into a discussion literally 2 days ago about this very point, and they were, you know, liberal, progressive woman and her male friend, and we were talking, and she was like, I just don't understand why the country, you know, reacts this way to women candidates. And she was referencing Hillary and all that stuff. And I said, well, look, you have to understand and put in context, and you just did in a very humorous way, but it's true. America's like progressive like Europe, right? We have this ideal in our head of, you know, that we're hanging with the big dogs who, you know, have had queens and female prime ministers and all this. We can do that. America, however, is much more puritanical. They have this very narrow view of what women can do in leadership roles. And it doesn't take a whole lot to kind of figure that arc out when you go back, even going back to the early days of someone like a Shirley Chisholm running for president and the public reaction to that, which was a double-edged sword as a black female running for the presidency. And then you bring that forward to a Hillary Clinton, you really begin to see the pattern that there is a significant portion of the country that is not as enlightened on this subject as they think they are. This is my take.
Well, I don't even think they think they are. Like, I don't think that they're worried about giving the impression of being enlightened.
Oh, okay.
You know?
Yeah.
You travel the country just like I do,
yeah.
You know, and you know as well as I do, there are places where you get off a plane and you've gone back in time 50 years.
Yeah, that's true.
You've just gone back in time. And when Hillary Clinton, one of the things, and I have to say it did surprise me, but how many women didn't like or wouldn't vote for Hillary Clinton because she was a woman?
Yeah, that's true.
Because she is a woman.
Yep.
It was like, what? You know, but it was eye-opening to me, but it is true. So that is a real thing. They look at that. I mean, with Barack Obama, and this is the case of the first black anything, right? First black fill in the blank.
Right.
You have to be incredible. You know, Barack Obama was incredible as an orator, as a statesman, as a person, his personality. You know what I mean?
Right.
He had to be that. It was like Jackie Robinson. Like, Jackie Robinson couldn't be an average player. Jackie Robinson had to be the most incredible baseball player they had ever seen just to give him a chance.
Right.
You know, so with a woman, I don't know if it's going to work the same or if it's just a matter of this next generation, the millennial generation, who are okay with it. It might take the 20 years for them to be the ones in charge,
yeah.
You know, 10, 15, 20, whatever, before a woman candidate gets elected. It is ridiculous. Listen, Kamala Harris was my favorite simply because she's a black woman.
Right.
Michael, black women have been telling me what to do all my life. They have never been wrong.
Never been wrong.
Not once.
Amen to that, brother. Hey.
One time I thought one was wrong, and 2 years later, I was like, I'll be damned. And she was like, I told you.
Oh, my God. You just brought back another memory with my wife. Yes, this is so true. This is so true.
It's the same thing with Mayor Pete, right? In,
yep.
in Iowa, when you had people say, oh, wait, he's gay? Can I change my vote? And it's like, how did you not know that? How uninformed can you possibly be to not know that a man who kisses his husband before he walks on stage is gay? Did you think they were really good friends?
Right.
So this is what you're up against.
Right.
And that's why there's a certain portion, like when you talk about people being offended or mad, there's a certain portion, you just got to let it go. Cause it's like, I can't communicate with you.
Yeah.
I got nothing. You know, there's a flat earth society. How do you talk to someone who says, well, you know, Michael, the earth is flat? Like, okay, we're done. Well, we can't talk. I got nothing. You have eliminated the baseline for any conversation.
Right, right. Yeah. So, and we'll just kind of roll with that, and say you live where in that space, because I don't get it otherwise. It's phenomenally amazing how people do approach these candidates, and certainly given the array of candidates that the Democrats have offered up this year. It is amazing to me how not clued in people are to who these individuals really are. I mean, like now, after 40 plus years of and now his second presidential election, people are just getting hip to the fact that Bernie Sanders, you know, did his honeymoon in Russia, or the views he has about Castro and Chavez and others. Other socialist type political players. I'm like, what, did you not pay attention to 2012? I mean, did you not? I mean, 16?
They really don't. I mean, you know, I said this in my first stand-up special. You know, America has the attention span of a hamster on crack. you can't. It's so difficult. Like, even with Bernie, right? Even with his history of this or that, people still get it wrong.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, oh, he got married in Russia and Putin was his best man. Like, exactly. That is exactly what happened. Yeah, you got it right.
I'm still stuck on the hamster on crack because I used to raise hamsters, so I kind of identify with that one probably a little bit more than I should. Folks, this is Alonzo Bowden. He's incredibly clued in, let me tell you. You can catch Alonzo coming up this February 27th and 28th. He'll be at the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas. If you're in that neighborhood, do check it out. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have a little bit more fun with my buddy Alonzo. We're going to get into exactly what's going on with the Democrats and who he thinks is that candidate who could potentially beat Trump. Dun, dun, dun. We'll be right back after this. All right, everybody, welcome back to the podcast. I'm Michael Steele, and we're having a great conversation with Alonzo Bowden. Again, as I mentioned, this February 27th to 28th is going to be at the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas. Check him out there. I'm going to throw some other dates where he's going to be appearing at the end of the podcast. Stick around for that. So, hey, Alonzo, so we were talking about the Dems and their narrative as it's unfolding right now. Bernie Sanders is the lead dog. He's got the pole position. Biden is trying to steal some juice from him. We'll see how that plays out in South Carolina. Elizabeth Warren is beating the crap out of Mike Bloomberg, and he ain't got jack. Man, all he's got is money, no delegates. I don't get it. How do you assess this field leading into Super Tuesday, which is going to be a big day where 40% of the delegates will have been chosen? Is this Bernie's right now from your estimation, or is there still room for hiccups?
Well, right now, I think it does look like Bernie, but the thing with these early primaries is they're not indicative of America. You know what I mean? Right. Like, especially when you look at Iowa and New Hampshire, you know, my take on that was, okay, so the four black people in New Hampshire voted differently than the three black people in Iowa.
Yeah. Right.
The United States has become an urban-based country. Our population centers are the big cities. There's more diversity in the big cities. Minority, LGBTQ community, black people, et cetera, et cetera. Until we get to states that have those population centers, it's hard to judge how this is going. Now, yeah, Bernie's got a lot of momentum. He looks like he could be the guy right now. I think when we get once some of the bigger cities and bigger population centers vote, it could change. You know, Bloomberg, yeah, all Bloomberg's got is money. And you know, enough with the billionaire. Okay, when you slip on stage and say, I bought a car, I mean, I help the conversation. Like, yeah, we know. So.
Oh, you caught that too, huh?
Yeah. I mean, the commercials look good, but honestly, go away. You know, I think the three are Bernie, Biden, and Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. Those are the three I think really have a chance to get this. And Bernie has the most momentum. And I like Bernie. This is the thing the Democrats have to do. And he's not my number one choice. But
right.
The Democrats have to do what the Republicans do, even though it's bad. You got to put party first. So, you know, whoever the candidate is, you got to go all in. If they had done that in 2016, Hillary would have won.
Right.
You know,
you have to support
the candidate. And even if you don't agree, get the office and then push it to the left or whatever. You know,
right.
I mean, there's a ton of Republicans that can't stand Donald Trump, but they wanted the power. Maybe they're businessmen who wanted no business regulations, or they want the environmental regulations to go away, or they're, you know, anti-abortion people or pro-gun or whatever. Whatever their one issue is, you know, the Republicans are much better at appealing to that voter. So you don't like Trump's views on one thing, but you want the party in power. The Democrats need to learn to do that. The Democrats need to learn to win an election. And I love Michelle Obama, but that whole thing about when they go low, we go high,
right,
that doesn't win elections, not anymore.
Right.
When they go low, you got to go low. You got to fight them in the trenches. You know, I have a great friend. She's Canadian. She lived in the U.S., and she put her money where her mouth is. When Trump won, she moved back to Canada. You know, everyone said they're leaving. She actually did. But one thing she said, it was very simple and it's very true. She said, you know, the Democrats can't come up with a slogan. You know,
right.
For a lot of voters, it is something. It sounds ridiculous, but it is something that simple that gets them involved or gets them to vote. They're the single issue voters. You know, you got to get those. And I think for the Democrats to win, they're not going to change the minds of any Republicans. But you have to energize the people who weren't going to vote, or the people who say, I don't care. You got to find a way to energize them. And fighting within the party over, you know, minor differences
right.
in policy, that doesn't help. It doesn't help.
So who in your estimation then? I mean, I'll share my thought on this. But you go first. Is there space then for a moderate candidate to come out of this thing on the other side and be in a competitive position for the nomination, not just the nomination, but to win in November? Do they, you know, because that's, look, we had this dance inside the RNC, the Republican Party, where, you know, on my watch, I had the emergence of the Tea Party. On Tom Perez's watch, he's a good buddy of mine from Maryland also, he's got the progressives. They're two sides of the same coin. And my navigation of that was clearly different from his because, you know, I had a Democratic president. He's got a Republican president, but the dynamics with each of those men is very, very different. You know, Barack Obama's not Donald Trump. But, you know, in sort of setting the course for how we would score victories, I had to work with the candidates as I found them. So that meant, you know, a lot of places I had to move more moderate Republicans into position to win. Is that the same challenge that the Democrats are facing? Now, this is a single shot because it's the presidency. I had a whole field of congressional candidates and senators and governors that I was moving in 2010 in an off-year election. But it's the same principle that the voters are looking for something, and I guess have the Democrats figured out what that is? Is it a little bit more moderate than you hear the Ocasio-Cortezes, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez from New York, and others are saying?
Well, I think the Democrats, I think the difference with the Democrats is, or maybe this is the same thing, but moving Bernie more toward the moderates is the challenge versus moving the moderates left to Bernie.
You
know?
Yeah.
I think some people, you know, and again, that socialist label, and I get it. It's what Bernie and what Bernie's people are talking about, you know, as far as the government helping people do miss the point where it's like, yeah, you consider it socialism if the government, you know, takes care of student loans, but you don't consider it socialism when the government gives millions to a million-dollar corporation. And it's still the government helping somebody, you know. But people don't understand it that way. So I think it's a matter of making Bernie more palatable to the middle and getting the extreme Bernie supporters. They're the ones, to me, that are the problem, because to them, if you're not 100% in on Bernie, you're the enemy. You know, and it's like, no, just that doesn't make me the enemy. If I believe in 70% of your candidate, 60% of your candidate, it doesn't mean that I'm your enemy. And this is where the Democrats always destroy themselves, with this infighting. So in answer to your question, that's what I think they need to do. I think trying to get the extreme closer to the moderate versus getting the moderate to go to the extreme. I think that is what the Democrats need to do. Now, how do you do it? Honestly, Michael, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, people, and I understand this, right? It's part of my job, and it's the part of the function of my life. I stay informed. I mean, I love reading the news. I grew up a news junkie and so on. And I know most people, you go to work, you come home, you got the kids, you got the this or that. You don't have time to see any more than the 2-minute clip on the news or the tweet that went viral. So you really don't know. And this is where, like I said, where the Democrats need to, you got to get that message that quick. You got to understand this person has 2 minutes. Give them a slogan, give them a message that they can get behind. Because if that 2-minute clip says Bernie is a socialist, that's scaring them. That's going to scare the hell out of them, you know? So control the narrative and make it quick. That's what I think they need to do.
One of the interesting and exciting things and reasons for having you on is there are a lot of perceptions that folks like yourself in the entertainment business, especially in the comedic space, you know, don't engage on these subjects, that you guys just kind of sit back and make fun of everything. And it's important, I think, for people to understand that you're students of politics, you're students of culture, you're students of everyday life in ways that most of us aren't. So you are paying a lot more attention than I bet you the average American is to a lot of stuff that's going on. Does your style of comedy or even comedy generally make politics, for example, much more accessible to people? I think so.
I mean, the big example was The Daily Show, you know, when people said, yeah, I get more news from Jon Stewart than I do from, you know, NBC or CBS or anything like that, because the comedy did make it palatable. And the other thing, I think this is what people miss with comics and just about all of us who talk about politics and issues. We make fun of it. We're mad about it because we know we can do better.
Right.
You know, I think that's the underlying dissatisfaction. It's like, you're going to tell me the United States of America can't figure out health care? Are you kidding me? Right. You know, like we're going to make fun of you until you do better because we know you can do better. Yeah, comics are more informed. Comics are more open. We don't have a filter or something like, there's no such thing as don't say that.
Right.
You're not going to be in the green room when comics are talking and be, hey, that's a little offensive. You know, that. Oh, really? You want offensive? Watch this.
You know? Yeah. I got something for you. You just buckle up, baby.
I can give you some of the most horribly offensive things you've ever heard, and we're laughing our ass off about it.
Right.
So I wish people were more informed. So if you're more informed because you heard a comic do a joke and you thought about something in a way you hadn't thought about it before, I think that's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's great. If you're getting your information from, you know, the Joe Rogan podcast because you love to listen to Joe, that's fine. You know, as long as you're getting some information, that's okay. And it works.
Well, you did 2 hours with Joe Rogan, which I enjoyed thoroughly, by the way. And that was an interesting combination of the two of you, because he actually just kind of like, he would just sort of set some stuff up and you would just kind of take it, run with it, reshape it, throw it back. You know, you guys had this thing. And I think a lot of people, when they hear that, when they hear, you know, a comic like yourself outside of the business, you know, you're not doing the job, you're not doing your stand up, but you're actually engaging in a conversation and you're dropping in, you know, pearls of funny here and there. But by and large, having a conversation, that makes it, I think, also much more accessible, because they begin to see you not just as the funny man, but they as a serious one who is funny. I mean, does that make sense?
Well, I think, I think the fantastic thing about when I'm on Joe's podcast or here talking with you, that we're too, like, Joe and I don't agree on everything,
right?
But we respect each other and we could talk about things. See, this is what's been lost in politics, you know, where it's like all or nothing, like my side has to win. Like you and I'm having a great time with this. Now, you may or may not know it, but I have done jokes about black Republicans. Don't know if you've heard.
Yeah, I've heard a few. I was surprised you hadn't dropped one by now, but that's okay. We still got time.
But see, we can have this conversation. We can laugh. We don't have to agree on everything, right. And we don't have to sit here yelling at each other. You know, the debate last night was the most ridiculous.
Oh, my God.
Like,
it's crazy.
Okay, let's just all yell over each other. You know, yeah, there's a few good shots at Bloomberg, but that's what we call low-hanging fruit. That's an easy target, right. You know? Tell me, in that debate, give me enough difference in your policies that I would pick, you know, one of you over the other. You know, right. that's what I want to hear. But I didn't hear that. I just heard the sniping and the talking over each other and so on. So, yeah, when you talk about doing a podcast, talking to somebody like Joe Rogan, like I say, talking to you, and we're in situations as a comic where I don't have to agree with this person, but I can still respect them and talk to them and vice versa. Now, I'm not going to walk into a setup situation, you know.
Right.
Years and years ago, I was invited to do something on Fox News. And like 5 minutes in, I was like, oh, hell no. No, because what they were trying to do, they were trying to ask questions in a way that they could set up the answer to be a Republican view. You know what
right,
I mean? It was
right,
like,
right.
No, man, you know, what do you think? I'm dumb. You think I don't recognize what you're doing here? Like, and I had a publicist, you know, who came to me and she was like, listen, just so you know, there's a lot of money. Like, they're really looking for a black Republican comedian. Like, and I was like, hell no. You know, but I mean, Diamond and Silk do it, right? They do it at the lowest common denominator of it. But they're cashing in. Now, would I do that? No.
Right.
What their life is like outside of that, well, it might be a reason they use the words Diamond and Silk and not their real names.
Exactly. You know? No, true. And I can almost guarantee you, they're not hanging as deep in the black community as, you know, as they probably otherwise would, simply because the backlash can be so intense, particularly if your own community feels that we've become the butt of your jokes or you're espousing things that distorts what's really happening inside the community. And that's always a real danger. And it's something I ran into and have run into a lot, you know, over the many years that I've been out in public, where people have this idea that, oh, well, you're not a real black man because you're Republican. And I'm like, okay, so I get up in the morning, the only thing I see is a black man. And let me break it down for you even further. I was born a black man before I was Catholic, before I was Republican, and before I was bald. So, well, actually, I came in bald, so I guess that doesn't work. But anyway, but people have these ideas about you, and you're right. What happens in media is they try to find the characters to perpetuate that stereotype or that perception, because it furthers a narrative, not just about a particular person or community, but it also furthers a broader political narrative that they once served. So you caught it before you stepped into it. Unfortunately, not everybody does that. And they get burned. They get burned.
Yeah, and we've had some characters, you know, like Omarosa, you know, who I've met and knew and this and that. Not well, but, you know, I knew her. And I told people, I said, look, Omarosa's in this for Omarosa.
Oh, yeah.
Like that. That's her, you know, that's her thing. This ain't about Trump or anything else. And when she parachuted out with a multi-million-dollar book deal, you know, I haven't talked to her since, but I'm pretty sure, like, that was a win.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it was a win. I've talked to her. It
Kanye,
was a win. Yeah.
You know, with Kanye, and I'm not happy with what Kanye does, but it is what it is. But I tell people, Kanye and Trump are the same guy.
Yeah.
That's why he likes him. It's like, yeah, as long as you're talking about me, I'm happy. I don't need to be informed to have an opinion and so on. But you know what I mean? But it's just about building the name and building the celebrity. And for Kanye, that works. I wish he'd go back to the killer music he used to make. You know, that's to me, like, that's the difference between Kanye and politics and Jay-Z and politics. You know, Jay's still dropping albums.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Jay's still doing that. Kanye is doing whatever he's doing. So these characters, they are who they are. They're in it for their own name. As far as the black community, and you know this, we can turn on you. We can turn on you for certain things, but we can also be far more accepting than other communities and other groups. You know, that there's, it's kind of like two sides to that coin. Let me tell you something. As a comic, okay, like when you go to the Apollo, and I'm talking about back when Harlem was black, to the young kids, Harlem was once black. Look in the history. It was amazing. It's completely changed now. It's hilarious. But
I know.
But,
well, gentrification.
But when I,
When
I did the Apollo, you know, they told you, they said, look, you got 30 seconds. Now, if they ain't laughing in 30 seconds, you know, they're going to boo you and this and that. That crowd, if they didn't like you, they boo you off stage. But if they loved you, you never felt love like that.
Right.
You never felt better than when that crowd thought you were funny. You know, so that's kind of how it works. You get both sides.
How'd you do?
People going to be honest.
How'd you do?
I got him.
You got
him? I absolutely got him. Yeah, I got him. You know, I've done the Apollo a couple of times, which I'm glad, because the first time you do it, you're just so scared that you can't appreciate or enjoy the fact you're at the Apollo Theater.
Right.
But, and you know, and I'll tell you exactly how I got him, because this just worked. It was in the early 90s, you know, hip-hop rap battles, East Coast, West Coast.
Yeah.
The big thing. And I said, I was born in New York. I live in L.A. If I was a rapper, I'd have to shoot myself. And the crowd was like, ah. And I was like, oh, they're mine.
You know, in a weird, sick way, that still applies today.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, my God. Folks, he is the one and only Alonzo Bowden. He's a good, good guy, funny man. You got to check him out this February 27th and 28th at the Paramount Theater in Austin, Texas. But wait, there's more. There's more. March 2nd to March 8th, he's going to be at Cape Town Comedy Festival in Cape Town, South Africa. Yes, I'm saying get on the plane and go see the brother. That's what I'm saying.
If you come to South Africa, I'm talking to your listeners, you come to South Africa, you told me you heard me on Michael Steele's podcast, I'll get you a free ticket to the show.
Oh, there you go.
I'm just saying.
There
you get to South Africa, I'll get you in.
That's what I'm talking about. You get the VIP, baby. That's what I'm talking about. And if you want more information on tickets and Alonzo, go to alonzobowden.com. That's Alonzo, alonzobodden.com. Man, I really appreciate you taking the time and spending a moment on the podcast. This has been a real treat for me. I've loved your stuff. I remember back in season 3 when you did the NBC's Last Comic Standing, and made your mark, and you've continued to do it. Keep it going strong. All the best to you, man.
Michael, this has been fantastic. Thanks for having me on, really. This has really been fun. I'm going to hit you up when I come to the D.C. area.
Oh, please do.
Hopefully you can make a show. And just so the listeners know how this thing works, okay? And when we talk about, I got to get my people to contact your people. Let me tell you why, listeners. Because when Michael Steele dials my iPhone, scam likely comes up on the screen. You see, there is no return number. It's just scam likely. So
yeah.
That is why I need my people to call his people.
Yeah, I've been running that scam for a while too. It's been working. Hey, you caught me. You caught me. Folks, you got to download this one. This is a special one. You know where to find me on Twitter and Stitcher and Apple Podcasts. You got to do the download. Oh, before I go, what was that Black Republican joke you told?
I said that, you know, Black Republicans aren't real. Yeah, they don't actually exist. They seem to, but no,
oh,
they're not real.
We're like fairy dust?
Yeah, kind of like unicorns. You name it. It's like, yeah, I heard of that. Yeah, you did, but no, they're not. No.
Okay. Yeah, you sound like my kids. Okay, got it. All right, folks. We're gonna wrap this one up. But again, thank everybody for listening, and don't forget to check out Alonzo Bowden when he's in a comedy club near you.
You got to know if you're in a blue state or a red state. Who knew the Crips and Bloods had our political system figured out? It's scary what's going on now, because he scares me because the conservatives are in charge, right? And whenever they always talk about America, it's America. So bring back the good old days. I'm black. Not like we have good old days. We ain't never seen a bunch of black people standing around. Oh man, remember the back of the bus? Oh, there was always a seat in the back of the bus.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.